The audible of the best in Bitcoin. This is the Cryptoconomy. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Cryptoconomy. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. I hope you are stacking your sats with Swan Bitcoin every week, every month, however you want to do it, but get that Bitcoin savings plan set up so you don't have to think about it. SwanBitcoin.com is where it's at. So, today we got a read actually from Marty's Bent. He does a, Marty Bent from Tales from the Crypt does a little newsletter. I'm sure a lot of y'all know this one. And he's always got some really great, just awesome little tidbits. I really love his newsletter. And every once in a while, he'll drop one that I just can't stop thinking about. And so I asked him, I was like, dude, you mind if I actually just read one of these? I know they're like short, but it could spark like a really fun discussion. And he was totally on board. So thanks to Marty for being cool with me sharing this out. But this is a really fun one. It's issue 708, Important Reminder. So let's go ahead and jump in, and I really want to give my take on this one after. Marty's Bent, issue number 708, Important Reminder. You can't dictate how people should use Bitcoin. Bitcoin has certain properties that enable different use cases. The predominant use case will fluctuate over time. Get over it. Tweet by Marty Bent. Bitcoin's narrative hasn't changed since it was launched. It has always been peer-to-peer digital cash. Digital gold is the best digital cash. Individuals' misunderstanding of the word cash has been the big problem. End tweet. Despite what some people may say or want you to believe, Bitcoin's main value proposition has not changed since it was launched on January 3rd, 2009. Bitcoin is peer-to-peer digital cash, always has been, and if enough Bitcoin users participate in the distributed system, always should be into perpetuity. Many people who have decided to launch and peddle altcoins will claim that they did so because Bitcoin's fees became too high and its confirmations proved to come in too slow, making it an unviable digital cash because cash exchanges should be instant and virtually feeless. However, the only thing these altcoin peddlers have highlighted is their ignorance when it comes to the definition of the word cash. Cash is a bearer instrument that can be used as final settlement during trade. This means that to fall under the definition of cash, a monetary good must be under the complete control of the user, and the receiver must be willing to accept it as final settlement in exchange for his good or service. Yes, some forms of cash, like the US dollar, come with low to no fees and are able to settle instantly once goods have been acquired and the monetary good handed over in exchange. However, that does not preclude other monetary goods from fulfilling the role of cash if they do not exhibit those two particular traits. And furthermore, while there may not be fees at the point of sale with cash instruments like the US dollar, there are hidden fees in the form of inflation that occurs from the debasement of the currency that cash instrument represents. Trade-offs exist. The US dollar provides instant and free transactions at the point of sale at the cost of a steady debasement over time. The only, quote, problem with Bitcoin is that it is upfront with its trade-offs, and they are visible and palpable during every transaction at the base layer. Due to the distributed nature of Bitcoin, the scarcity of its block space, and the scarcity of the total supply of Bitcoins, fees and final settlement time stick out to the end user. Scarce block space creates a competition to get transactions included in blocks in a timely manner, which creates a fee market with the highest bidders getting their transactions mined. Never forget, fees will only go as high as individuals are willing to pay. This will vary depending on the urgency with which one needs to move their UTXOs. If an individual is willing to wait a bit, they can secure a lower fee. The nature of proof of work makes it advantageous to wait until a certain number of blocks have been added on top of the block a user's transaction was included in, so that he can guarantee that it won't be overwritten. Hence, a longer final settlement time when compared to a cash transaction at a bodega. And since there will only ever be 21 million bitcoins, and individuals the world over are competing to acquire those bitcoins, fees will naturally rise in US dollar terms as the price of Bitcoin rises with more users. This is the nature of digital gold. These are the trade-offs Bitcoin users have to live with if they want to ensure a peer-to-peer distributed cash that is controlled by no one and is unable to be debased via inflation. These trade-offs are very much worth it, in my opinion.
But Uncle Marty, most people are using Bitcoin as a store of value and speculating on its increased purchasing power over time. No one's using it as a medium of exchange.
Pipe down now, child. That doesn't matter. What matters is what Bitcoin enables. Bitcoin enables people to use it as a store of value, medium of exchange, unit of account, etc. Just because you perceive that most Bitcoiners use it as a store of value at this current moment doesn't depreciate its ability to function as a medium of exchange at all. People use Bitcoin as a medium of exchange every day. You can't dictate how people should use Bitcoin. Bitcoin has certain properties that enable different use cases. The predominant use case will fluctuate over time. Get over it. Bitcoin has, and always will be, a digital cash instrument, and sooner or later, more and more people will come to realize that digital gold is the best digital cash. Final thought. I can feel the warm weather on the horizon, and I am all about it. All right, and that was Marty's Bent, issue number 708, an important reminder. I want to talk about this idea a little bit, but let's talk first about Swan Bitcoin. So they actually just dropped an announcement that haven't even had 3 full weeks that they have been live. It's like 17 days, and they have already hit $1 million a year of recurring buys. Growing that HODL floor, baby. Bitcoin is only getting more scarce, guys. If you have not set up your Bitcoin savings plan yet, you gotta do it. SwanBitcoin.com, there is no easier place to get that done. Set it once and forget it. Be a part of the HODL floor. That constant demand for new Bitcoin. Take a little bit of what you earn every week, every month, whatever it is, and put it to Bitcoin. Put it into sound money. And don't get caught up in trading. It is the surest way to give away the soundest money in the world, and you don't want to do it. And this is one of the ones that you can trust me on. You don't have to go verify by losing your money yourself. So check out Swan Bitcoin. They have an awesome crew and an awesome service. It's swanbitcoin.com, and I'll have the link in the show notes so you can let them know that I was the one that sent you. And I also recommend checking out Marty's Bent. If you don't read the newsletter, it's always really short little snippets. It's almost always just little blobs like this. And there is a lot of gold nuggets or nuggets of Bitcoin. I don't know how that analogy works, but there's a lot of little gold nuggets in there. He's always got some interesting ideas, and every once in a while he'll drop one that just gets me really thinking, and it makes me want to talk about it. And that's what this one was. And the general idea of this one that just really struck me and that I think is so important to get across is that you can't tell other people why or for what reason they should value Bitcoin. It's like a Gigi's lesson, that Bitcoin will change you more than you will change it. I think that's literally like lesson one in his 21 lessons. But the idea is to look at Bitcoin and see what people are valuing. It's a market that explicitly will determine why it is valuable. It's one of those things, like, we don't have, without seeing choice, without seeing the consequences of a market in determining the value of something, we don't really know what makes it valuable. It's like we talked about in the, or I brought it up in the Raleigh Meetup podcast the other day, how people are always talking about, like, oh, well, you know, somebody buys up a bunch of masks or whatever and tries to sell them for 800% or 700% markup or whatever, that, oh, well, that means that it's really, really scarce. And we see these news reports of they've done this and, like, now it's scarce on the market. When the reality is we have no idea. We have absolutely no idea. That's a news report. That's a tweet. That's not market information. It is whether or not that person actually made a return, whether their speculative bet, their aggressive and highly risky speculative bet to buy a bunch of masks, which are easily and cheaply produced, and thinking that you can sell them for a 700% markup because you got 40 boxes of them, you're not going to make any measurable scarcity in the actual market. And whether or not they can actually offload those at a profit is going to be what determines whether or not we can discern if there is a real scarcity or not. And the more volume he's actually able to do at that price, the more we actually know there is a scarcity there and that we should be producing more. That is what that's the very source of knowledge, is whether or not that's a profitable risk. Otherwise, it's all just speculation. Otherwise, we're completely basing everything on emotion and guessing. And in that same way, we have no idea what Bitcoin's true value is. We hope and we think and we observe what it might be, but it is determined by the individual. It is not something where you can just drop your expectations on it. And that's what I think all, like, so many of the altcoiners and the fork, you know, Bcash and BSV have done, is they've decided what Bitcoin is for, and then when it doesn't get used for that, they're like, oh, well, Bitcoin is broken. That's like seeing the internet in the early days and saying that, oh, well, this is definitely for newsgroups. Newsgroups are the reason the internet exists. And then when people start using it for email and Netflix, it's like the internet has been broken because it was all about newsgroups. How do you know? What do you mean? What do you mean it was for? What do you mean they should? What does any of that mean? Based on who? Your subjective judgments? Your subjective valuation? You're going to put that on somebody else? Well, what if they run a node, and what if they value it for a completely different reason than you do? There are clear and real trade-offs. There are absolutely real costs to maintaining the security and independence of this system. And if people are not willing to trade those for some frivolous utility, or for some feature, or for some gadget or widget that they're going to put on top of it, how is it that they are wrong, but you are not? And, you know, Marty's right in this. This is going to change all the time. Like, we've got a fee market, and it's critical that we have a fee market, because the thing's going to be run on fees one day. So we have to have the trade-offs and the costs have to be up front. And that's one of the strongest points in this that so many people just completely try to cover up or hide, is that there are real costs. Bitcoin just tells you what they are, and it doesn't try to hide them. It doesn't say, oh no, pretend that there are no trade-offs, pretend that there's no cost to the independence or the security of this thing. We'll just hide it in infinite inflation. We'll hide it behind you know, centralized nodes that process all the transactions for free and pretend that everything's, you know, everything, all this is gotten for free. There are no trade-offs. There, you know, play the nano game. Oh, infinite transactions, infinite scalability on layer one, no trade-offs, super decentralized, we got the same code, blah, blah, blah. That's all bullshit. You will never know the value of any utility or of any use case or unique property that Bitcoin provides if you are not showing its costs. If you do not recognize and acknowledge the costs of that, and if the market does not see the cost, we will never know the real price of it. And there is a real arrogance in thinking that the market is 100% indefinitely wrong about what they value in Bitcoin as an asset, and that it should be changed to accommodate our subjective individual opinions, rather than our subjective individual opinions recognize and respond to what Bitcoin is being valued as. Not a single one of these cryptocurrencies has seen widespread adoption as a payment mechanism. Not one. Yet Bitcoin is greater than $100 billion, $150-odd billion in market cap for exactly what it is. Not because millions of merchants have onboarded it and put in point-of-sale systems. Not because it's for cheap, immediate payments that are completely feeless, but simply because it is a decentralized bearer instrument. It is cash in the digital realm. If you hold it, it is yours. If you send a transaction, it can be accepted as a final settlement. And you know, like when he's talking about, when Marty kind of like goes over the idea of cash and a bearer instrument and why Bitcoin is digital cash, and also why I love the idea that, you know, a digital gold is the best digital cash. Like the monetary value in its payments, the security and the utility of the payment is based on the security and utility of its value. The value is not dependent on the payments. Like it's a completely backwards thinking. Because you can do something with, like, I can send plenty of payments with a numbers spreadsheet. I can do it infinitely. I can, you know, build an API on a website and make a database. I can send payments all day. That is not a utility that makes my spreadsheet valuable. That's not it. It's the other way around. If I have something valuable and something that is secure and independent, something that has a feature, has a use case that nothing else can provide, well, then it becomes useful in payments. Then I can make a payment of value with it. But anyway, so the analogy goes back to a physical cash, that somehow there's no cost in physical cash. And he brings up the idea that there's hidden fees in the form of inflation and debasement of the currency, and in the form of a central controller, someone who is dictating and controlling the value and the really the market and the usability of that currency. You're completely reliant on someone else, and that is a huge trade-off and a huge cost that is hidden. But there's another more explicit cost. You can't do cash over the internet. You can't. You have a geographical cost. The only way that you can do a cash transaction, feeless, quote-unquote, is with the enormous fee of traveling to the location where you want to do the transaction. Same with gold. Same with every other asset that has real scarcity. There is no way to do it decentralized and independently online. It has a phenomenally high cost. What's the cost in time and a plane ticket and finding the actual location and getting food and sustaining yourself over the period in which it takes for you to get on a plane and fly from the US to Japan, find the person you're there to do business with, grab the good, and take it back with you to do an in-person cash transaction that is, quote-unquote, no fee? So what's the alternative? You give up all of the control. You give up all of the independence to a third party, to someone who's controlling that currency. You give up all of your privacy to 5 banking institutions and the 5 days it takes for all of those things to communicate across all the ridiculous borders and regulations and additional costs to get digital points from the US to Japan. To pretend there are no trade-offs and there are no costs is simply to stick your head in the sand or to sell people snake oil. And no matter how much you think you've got the magic sauce, you are not going to come in and fix Bitcoin. And you know, we'll probably have to come to terms with this with the Lightning Network too. I think the value of the Lightning Network and instant settlement and the contract could very well, particularly during like periods of, like, I guess you could say, extreme weather on the time chain, where fees get high and where there's a lot of fluctuation or there's a lot of movement between the Lightning Network infrastructure and the Bitcoin base layer, is that micropayments and even potentially small retail payments get priced out on the Lightning Network. And I've already come to terms with that, with the fact that that might be the case. The value proposition in large settlement on the Lightning Network, once there's heavy infrastructure, when we've passed this bootstrapping phase, that potential could be huge. And then at the same time, the incredible amount of privacy that you can get by taking payment traffic off of the base chain and by taking movement between exchanges off the base layer, so that people can't watch and see what you're doing and seeing which countries you're trying to, you know, or exchanges that you're trying to arbitrage between, that you have private channels in the millions of dollars with these institutions. I think the value of that could very well cause liquidity for retail payments to be priced out, just because, at least in the short term, because there's a vastly more valuable use case to take advantage of. And I don't know how people ignore it. I don't know how, like, so many people that I have conversations with don't see that there's a larger problem than point of sale, that there's a more significant problem with our money than cheap payments. There is a $100 trillion problem. There is an $83.7 trillion debt imbalance problem. There is a 100-year fractional reserve problem. And it's caused one of the greatest debt imbalances in the history of the world. If Bitcoin can fix that, and it takes the cost of 30-cent transactions, $5 transactions, that will get priced out. And when you can't show me one out of thousands of cryptocurrencies that have any users who are there simply because of cheap payments, where is your data on the fact that that's more useful? I'm not even, and this is with me using the Lightning Network and valuing it highly because of its privacy and its low-cost payments. I mean, we just made a video going around town using Fold and BitRefill on the Breeze wallet, and we paid hardly any fees all day long. In fact, I think almost every transaction, I mean, it depends on the route, but I think it was like, you know, 1 to 5 Satoshis, which is hundredths of a cent. I want to be able to do retail payments. I want to do normal transactions with Bitcoin. I think Lightning Network is an awesome value for that, but I'm not going to break Bitcoin to get that if there's something that's trillions of dollars more valuable than my ability to buy groceries with it. If there's a choice between whether or not it secures trillions of dollars, whole economies from being imbalanced and going through ridiculous debt manipulation, or it does 3-cent transactions, I don't care about those 3-cent transactions anymore. I would rather it solve the larger problem, if it does in fact solve it, which the market will decide if it does. And if it doesn't solve that problem, well, then it will still work for the lower value transactions. But it very much appears it can solve the multi-trillion dollar problem. So it is up to us to engineer a way to use it for the other. And if that takes 6 years to come about, if that takes a decade to figure out in full on how to make that work, destroying what makes it able to solve a deca-trillion dollar problem in order to get that is absolutely idiotic. Bitcoin is simply going to find the most potent and widespread problem in monetary systems, and it will fix that first. And after that, it will enable anything and everything else of value that we can do with it. It will enable a secure store of value. It will be a medium of exchange. It will be a unit of account because it's programmable money. And most importantly, we see the costs. We know exactly what it costs to get that independence and decentralization because we have a real market for that cost. And any currency or any system or network that attempts to cover that up or hide it behind centralization or hide it behind inflation will be at a profound disadvantage, because they will be selling a lie and they will have prices that do not inform of the truth. I will recommend yet again The Use of Knowledge in Society by Hayek. Just an amazing piece. It's absolutely critical. It's still to that and The Pretense of Knowledge, which we'll probably actually cover on this show, because I haven't read it yet. Well, I haven't done an audio version of it yet on the show. Those are some of the most fascinating concepts in economics that I think are completely lost. I mean, on the average person, on 99.5% of the people out there, they don't have any, even the foggiest idea of that perspective when looking at the economy and looking at what a price is. I think we grossly, grossly oversimplify the function of the market and the function of the price system. And that's why I consider those the absolute most essential pieces, because I think you can derive most of the other truths of economics from that perspective, from seeing it that way. So I'll link to that in the show notes, as well as obviously Marty's Bent, the newsletter, and so you can get these little tidbits. But I could go on and on about this, and I obviously have a strong opinion about it. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed that one. I guess we'll stop that here. I don't think there was anything else explicitly that I wanted to go over. I don't know. I've got another interview in just a little while, and I may be, because I didn't finish this episode yesterday, and I'll be publishing this on Friday here, I may have another episode coming either late today or over the weekend. Keep an eye out. But with that, let's go ahead and close this one out. A thank you to Marty Bent for the Tales from the Crypt show, and of course for the newsletter that gets me hyped up all the time. I make sure to have the link so that you guys can check that one out. And a thank you to the team over at Swan Bitcoin for supporting this show and keeping the Audible of the Bitcoin space alive and healthy for everyone who does not have the time to read it all, but wants to consume and learn about everything in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space. That's what we're here for. I'm Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And that is becoming truer and truer with every episode. Okay, I love you guys. And don't forget to subscribe and share this out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin space. And until next time, take it easy, guys.